Education and healthcare reporting on SDPB is supported by Regional Health, helping patients and communities live well.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. ADHD coach Alex High returns to the Kirby Family Studio and SDPB's Sioux Falls Studio for a third in a series of conversations we've been having about living with ADHD, and he's been hosting community ADHD conversations in Sioux Falls as a part of his coaching business, Reset ADHD. Today's topic, ADHD and crime, whether or not there is a connection. So tell me, Alex, well, first, thanks for coming back.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And this is so fascinating because the big question is there a connection? Let's start there.
Unfortunately, there is. 25% of our prison population has ADHD.
Say that again. How many percent?
25%.
Really?
One-fourth. And to put that in perspective, like the percentage that has it in the general population is like, depending on where you look, 2 to 5%. So like it's a massive increase.
So that becomes there's a lot to unpack there.
Oh yeah.
There's a big challenge. So how do you approach those numbers then? How do you kind of get your mind around that? Where do you begin?
Around the number of
What's going on?
Why is that happening? Okay, yeah. Excellent. I think it's important to start from a perspective that like no one is destined to commit a crime.
Yeah.
Everyone has free will, but there are certain biological factors, situational factors, environmental factors that can play with and interact with all three of those different aspects and cause someone to be more likely to commit a crime. So if you look at, you know, the structure of the ADHD brain and the structure of brains of, you know, spouse abusers, murderers, psychopaths, people who've committed lots of crimes, you can see that there are some similarities, there are some differences, at least one that I know that's different between those two brains, but, you know, structurally, like, there are abnormalities in both of those groups of people. There are also functional differences in the different parts of the brain, and it's really fascinating. I actually did my master's final project on neurocriminology, so the study of how the brain affects criminal behavior. And
as you look into that study, you know, once you know that, like you said, nobody's destined, so you're not doomed, but yet it's worth paying attention to. Does this go back to the bigger, the bigger conversation about just you have to manage this? You have to be paying attention to what's going. That seems like a pretty good place to start. If you know this, what do you do about it?
Yeah, and I think like knowledge is the key point. That's why I'm having this conversation tonight. It's why, you know, I'm on the internet trying to share information. So what do you do? You have to, like, again, I think proper treatment is the key. And that's, you know, the bigger reason why I'm doing this series of talks is like to get the word out there about ADHD, you know. Specifically with crime, you know, you've got ADHDers who are prone to impulsivity and have problems regulating their emotions. Well, when you get those two together, sometimes you can have violence come about as a result of that. On the other side of things, like if you aren't properly treating ADHD, a lot of people tend to self-medicate, and that means using and abusing drugs, alcohol, all that stuff, which can lead to more crime if you're, you know, driving drunk or using illegal drugs to manage your ADHD, and it's a huge problem right there.
And I know as a coach, you work one-on-one with people, but I'm wondering if you have thoughts about, from a policy standpoint, is it a matter of really starting in the school system with, you know, services and treatment for kids with ADHD? Is it in the prison population itself to sort of, reduce recidivism and try to keep people, you know, once we have people diagnosing them with this and trying to help them treat their ADHD so that when they are, you know, back in the public space that they know how to do things differently, they know what some of those, danger points are?
Yeah, I think you touch on a number of issues right there. So I'm going to try and
let's
work
pick that apart.
Yeah.
I'm still kind of blown away by this. I'm having a hard time getting my mind.
You bring up an interesting point with recidivism. Like, ADHD has been linked to repeat offending. So that's, again, a big issue. But, you know, you also mentioned potentially dealing with it in prison. Well, by then it's too late. They've already committed crimes. So in my perspective, with any sort of ADHD treatment, it's best to intervene as early as possible so we don't build up negative repetitive bad behaviors. So, you know, when we're in elementary school, you know, we're doing, you know, screening for their eyesight, their vision, you know, their hearing, you know, how fast are they growing, you know. Every year in elementary school, we had, you know, the screening where you had to go through all these tests, but we didn't do anything like psychological or neurological. A ways down the road, once our technology is cheaper and it's there, like, I would love to see, like, scanning of the brain so we can see, okay, this, you know, the amygdala right there, that's the emotional center of the brain right there, that's smaller than it should be. We got to watch this kid for, you know, emotional reactions. And that's not, you know, taking people with misshapen brains and putting them on an island and just letting them go. It's saying, okay, let's watch this person. Let's make sure we have the right interventions in place so they don't go down a bad behavioral path. And, you know, looking at, you know, psychological screenings earlier, it could help kids, you know, with dyslexia or ADHD or depression, anxiety, like all these issues that we're seeing in kids, very young kids, surprisingly, and tragically, you know, if we're doing these health screenings, like, you know, we're more than just our physical bodies, you know, we have our minds and...
Right. What does that early intervention look like? Once you know, you know, say you could wave a magic wand and say, mm-hmm. we're going to get brain scans and we're going to, you know, find some of those markers and handle that responsibly, which mm-hmm. of course is fraught with issues, but, and then what?
So you want to, you know, watch these behaviors, you know, part of what I do as a coach is to help people learn, you know, what works best for them. And, you know, when we're doing that earlier with kids, it's a little harder for them to have that self-awareness. So, like, you know, you do want to teach, like, good behavior and, like, good habits. So, like, those kids who aren't going to have, you know, self-regulation, they might need more time to learn, study behaviors, how to control your emotions, how to manage your time. So those are things you can really hone in on, and you can give them more specialized care.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about your journey and some of the the early indications that this, because you didn't find out, you were a little bit older, right?
Yeah, when I was 20 when I was diagnosed.
Right. Yeah. So if that's the situation, and you mostly work with adults and mm-hmm. young adults, where does a person sort of begin?
As an adult?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This isn't diagnosed. This isn't something that was on your radar. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you know, you're listening to this show and you're like, that kind of sounds like me and I'm a little worried. What's your first step?
Yeah. Well, if you don't have a diagnosis yet, go out and get one. At least get tested for it. And make sure they actually do test you. When I was first getting a diagnosis, the first doctor I saw just kind of sat there, talked to me for like 5 minutes and said, I don't think you have it. And basically kicked me out of her office. When I actually did get tested for it, like, yeah, we saw certain things. So, you know, when you do get your diagnosis, the first thing you want to do is really study ADHD, get to know it, get to know, like, what sort of behaviors are ADHD-like behaviors. Because, you know, as you have grown up with ADHD and not knowing about it, there are certain behaviors of yours that feel isolating. Mm. And that's actually what we're going to be talking about next month, is these weird behaviors that ADHD people have. Or is it, you know, just them being weird, or is it part of their ADHD? As a side note.
Because we've all got our weird.
Yeah.
Right.
So what you do then is you learn about ADHD. You realize, oh, this is why I do this thing. And you're becoming more aware about yourself. Okay, now I know why I do these things. Now I got to figure out, how do I manage these things? And, you know, these with ADHD, these little things that most people seem to do with no problem, ADHD is just, it's like the hardest thing in the world. So you have to learn about, you know, what specifically with that issue is so hard for you. Then you can learn, you know, more about your strengths and everything like that. You know, one of the tragedies about an ADHD diagnosis, it just tells you what's wrong. It doesn't tell you what's right. Ed Hollowell, who's one of the leading ADHD experts, he says, like, we need to start telling people with ADHD what they're good at. And so that's the other side of it, is you have to learn, you know, what's up with the ADHD brain, but you also have to learn, like, what am I good at? What can I do well?
You as an individual. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you can use your strengths to overcome those challenges.
When you talk about those little behaviors that are ADHD related, give me an example from your own life, something that you struggled with. Can you be specific about how it looked for you? Because it's different for everybody.
Yeah. One of the things that's weird about the ADHD community is like, we have this weird, zany sense of humor. And I didn't realize that was a thing until several years after my ADHD diagnosis. I remember growing up and kind of always being told, you have a weird sense of humor. Like one time in class, a teacher like said it in front of the entire class. And I was like, well, yeah, there are others that have weird senses of humor too. And he goes, no, there's something really weird about yours. And it was this like isolating moment. And like, that was a family friend who was saying that to me. And it's just like, dude, come on. So there was like that gap. I always felt different. And so like when I read that in an ADHD book, like I had to stop for a second because it was just like such relief to learn, oh, there are others like me out there.
Yeah. So for most of us, because I was laughing when you said that, we almost take that as a compliment. Like, dude, you've got a weird sense of humor. Mm-hmm. But it was isolating for you because he was really bringing the point home that you're different than everyone else in this classroom.
And you see that a lot in people who got diagnosed with ADHD as an adult. They grew up always feeling different but never really knowing why.
And therefore isolated. Mm-hmm. So the community gatherings are also a way to overcome that isolation and to be in a room with other people who can talk freely about that and say, yeah, I know, right?
That's just being in the same place as someone who gets it is just such a relief. And like if my presentation, which will be maybe 10 minutes, maybe less, if that doesn't interest you at all, come at least for the conversation that will happen afterwards. We'll start talking about crime, but it'll drive off into other things. And
tell us where people can connect with this. It's what night?
Second Tuesday of every month at Boss's Pizza on Minnesota Avenue here in Sioux Falls. For more information, go to resetadhd.com. You can also find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn at resetadhd.
Alex, hi. You're doing important work, and we appreciate you sharing some of that work with us.
Thank you for having me.